This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhaib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
African diaspora that have left the continent and in search of better life, not just in the continental USA, but also in Europe, Asia, and South America. These, some of our people, Africans, moved to find better lives outside of the continent because of certain issues. Some are political and some are economic.
That's Chukwunonso Vincent Iwanoge, Chair of Maryland Governor's Commission on African Affairs, on the African diaspora becoming an increasingly critical constituency in American politics. Details coming up. Also, four candidates are vying for Mozambique's presidency in tomorrow's election. And experts warn the human rights situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo is on a downward spiral. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Four candidates are vying for Mozambique's presidency. Some pledge to rid the country of alleged widespread corruption and improve its economy, while others say they will end the long-running insurgency in the northern province of Cabo Delgado that has driven out about 1 million since 2017. As VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports from Maputo, some Mozambicans say they are more interested in a better life than who wins the election this week.
The same Frelimo party has ruled Mozambique in southern Africa since its 1975 independence from Portugal. Some say the country is doing just fine, including 69-year-old Argentina Bebe, who told VOA she's too old for change and wants continuity in presidential and legislative elections slated for Wednesday.
I'm not interested in change. I already know the people, but I prefer to continue the improvement of Mozambique.
Others, like 28-year-old Ernesto Cremildo Castigo, who works at a butcher shop, says he'll vote for change.
Mainly due to corruption, so that Mozambique can develop, so that society can feel more at ease in terms of justice, in terms of education, in terms of public transportation.
Aslak Orr, researcher at the Christian Michelsen Institute in Norway, has been doing research on Mozambique for 25 years. He says corruption does affect the daily lives of ordinary people.
We have everyday corruption where people meet civil services and they have to, you know, pay little bribes in order to get their services out of the state or municipal institutions that they relate to, and that complicates things a bit.
Four candidates are vying for the presidency, including Daniel Chapo, the choice for the ruling Frelimo party. At a recent rally, the 47-year-old former radio presenter told supporters that peace and security for his country will be a top priority.
Because without peace, without security, there is no development. As I said here, we have our brothers who are suffering from terrorist attacks in Cabo Delgado.
The government has been battling an insurgency in the gas and oil-rich Cabo Delgado province, where about 4,000 people have reportedly been killed and about 1 million displaced since 2017, affecting multi-billion dollar oil and gas projects. Meanwhile, analysts say that one of Frelimo's biggest accomplishments has been ending years of its brutal war with the Mozambican National Resistance Movement, or RENAMO. RENAMO has since become one of the main opposition parties that came in second in the last presidential election. After the death of longtime leader Afonso Dhlakama in 2018, its newest leader, Osufo Mamad, accuses the Frelimo party of having no proposals to solve ordinary people's problems.
Vote for you have to have jobs tomorrow so we have good access roads. Did you hear me right? Your land is a rich area. You are poor. It's through Frelimo's poor governance.
The other two candidates include Lutero Simango, a 64-year-old and leader of the Mozambique Democratic Movement, and 50-year-old Venancio Mondlan, an independent who used to belong to the RENAMO party and seems popular among the youth. The National Electoral Commission met with international observers Friday to explain the voting system and answer their questions. The commission chairperson, Carlos Simao Matsine, said that all voting materials should be in place by Monday, and voting is expected to take place across the country, including in Cabo Delgado. 17.1 million people have registered to vote, 3 million more than the number was at the last election in 2019. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Monday marked the first anniversary of the October 7th terrorist attack that Hamas perpetrated on Israel. While reaffirming its staunch support for Israel, the United States lamented the civilian deaths caused by the ensuing war. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
As Israel intensified its air and ground offensive against Hamas militant targets in the Gaza Strip, Israeli mourners mark the anniversary of the terrorist attack that Hamas launched in southern Israel on October 7, 2023. About 1,200 people were killed and 250 were kidnapped. Hamas is still holding about 100 of them captive. During a ceremony led by Rabbi Aaron Alexander, U.S. President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden lit a candle in the White House in remembrance of the victims. Vice President Kamala Harris and the second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, marked the October 7th anniversary by planting a memorial tree on the grounds of their official residence.
We must reunite the hostages held in Gaza with their families. And I will never stop fighting for the release of all the hostages, including the American citizens, living and deceased.
U.S. Senators Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal expressed U.S. support of Israel Monday as they met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
It was the worst attack on the Jewish people since the Holocaust, but unlike the Holocaust, we fight back. And we're fighting like lions with the support of the American government.
Even with mandated civilian evacuations, Israel's military campaign has left nearly 42,000 Palestinians dead and more than 97,000 wounded, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry, which does not distinguish between combatants and civilians in its count. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller acknowledged the civilian suffering on both sides during Monday's briefing with reporters.
The United States mourns the death of every innocent who died on October 7th and in the year since. And we are determined to continue to work for a ceasefire agreement that brings the hostages home, alleviates the suffering of the Israeli and Palestinian people, and ultimately brings an end to this war.
Israel, however, has widened its war to include Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. The Iranian-backed militia had recently intensified its retaliatory attacks for the war in Gaza. Peace in the region, at least in the short term, will probably continue to be elusive, analysts say. Raphael Cohen is a senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation.
Absent the return of all the hostages, it's hard to see this Israeli government, or frankly any Israeli government, agreeing to a ceasefire.
Relatives of the hostages still held captive by Hamas also commemorated the October 7th attack. During a ceremony in Tel Aviv, they repeated their demands that Israel negotiate the hostages' release. But analyst Cohen is skeptical Netanyahu's government will change its approach anytime soon. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
In January, the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, ordered Israel to prevent acts that violate international laws against genocide in its assault against Hamas militants. In its initial ruling in a case South Africa filed, the ICJ ordered Israel to take measures to prevent harming civilians, but did not order not to suspend fighting. Darren Taylor reports that the case has had a significant impact on South Africa's relations with Israel and Arab states.
During the International Court of Justice hearing in January, the South African legal team described Israel as an apartheid state that should end a near 60-year occupation and blockade of Gaza. It accused Israel of genocide against Palestinians in Gaza and asked the court to order Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's administration to withdraw its military from the territory. Israel's lawyers called South Africa's charge baseless, accusing President Cyril Ramaphosa's government of functioning as the legal arm of Hamas. Israel says it's defending itself against Hamas terrorists who attacked on October 7 last year, killing about 1,200 people and taking more than 250 hostage.
Free, free! Palestine! Free, free! Palestine! Free, free! Palestine!
On Monday, Sheikh Riyad Fattah of South Africa's Muslim Judicial Council addressed thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters in Cape Town.
We stand here. We stand in support of Hamas.
Allahu Akbar!
We stand here. We stand in support of Palestine.
Allahu Akbar!
The West has come together. America, they support the illegitimate state, the Zionist state of Israel.
Wits University international relations expert Professor John Stremlau was an American diplomat in the Middle East in the 1970s and 1980s.
Well, I applaud South Africa's attention and reminders of the plight of the Palestinians, because the Palestinian state is the critical element in this equation which could ignite a peace process. But I don't see, frankly, Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, relenting at all. He has been opposed to that forever.
Stremlau says Israel's attacks in Gaza, which have claimed more than 40,000 lives, as well as South Africa's ICJ court case, have destroyed what was Pretoria's already strained relationship with Tel Aviv. The Israeli and South African governments are no longer communicating. South Africa closed its embassy in Tel Aviv, and Israel recalled its ambassador. Stremlau says the aftermath of the October 7 attacks served to move the Ramaphosa administration closer to almost all of Israel's enemies in the Middle East, especially Iran. An Iranian diplomat in Pretoria, Mostafa Daryabari, says his country moved closer to South Africa because of Israel's assault on Gaza.
More ties to government happen. So menacing cultural, financial, industry, different thing, and one of them is oil. Regarding the oil, we have lots of ties, contracts, and when people don't know each other, we say that they are the enemy of what they don't know. So for two nations, it's very important for us to start their cultural communication, to know each other more, to know their...
Iran this year became a member of the BRICS group, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And South Africa now has closer relationships with Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Several countries have backed South Africa's ICJ case, including Egypt and Mexico. In its provisional ruling in January, the ICJ ordered Israel to act to prevent harming civilians and acts that could be genocide. The court, however, did not order a ceasefire in Gaza. It could be years before the ICJ issues a final ruling. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs, and a whole lot more. And of course, we would love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. A short time ago, the White House said U.S. President Joe Biden is postponing his planned trip to Germany and Angola this week to work on preparations to Hurricane Milton in the state of Florida and relief efforts after Hurricane Helene. He was scheduled to go to Germany on Thursday and then arrive in Angola on Sunday. No new dates for the trip has been announced. Hurricane Milton is expected to hit Florida tomorrow. Hurricane Helene devastated large parts of the southern United States almost 2 weeks ago. Biden's visit to Angola would have been his only trip to Africa as president. He had promised during a summit of African leaders in Washington in 2022 that he would visit the following year. The U.S. State Department has said the visit to Angola was meant to build on Biden's meeting with President João Lourenço in November 2023 and in 2021. The State Department said the trip was meant to show the U.S. commitment to its African partners. Over 2.4 million African immigrants live in the U.S. as part of the growing African diaspora. This diverse community is becoming an increasingly critical constituency in American elections, asserting both economic and political power. Chukwunonso Vincent Iwanoge is chair of Maryland Governor's Commission on African Affairs, as well as chair for the African Diaspora Advisory Board for Prince George's County. Remittances, as well as refugees coming forward to claiming a stake in American politics, are some of the points he discussed with me in our conversation.
African diaspora that have left the continent and in search of better life, not just in the continental USA, but also in Europe, Asia, and South America. These some of our people, Africans, moved to find better lives outside of the continent because of certain issues. Some are political and some are economic. But when they left the continent in search of a better life, so what happens is that they establish new homes in these places, give birth, get married, and start working. But because of the way we're structured as a communal people, we have families back home that we do not forget. And because governments are not really built on social welfare, the Africans that are in diaspora become that source of survival for their families back home. When they work 1, 2, 3 jobs, some monies are dedicated to their families where they live overseas, but some of that other monies are repatriated to the families back home. And those repatriations actually become part of the GDP of most of African countries.
So, Vincent, they help their people, their relatives back home. Talk to me about the African diaspora stepping out of the shadows and stakes a claim here in the United States. When does that transformation come?
So that transformation is an ongoing work that we're part of what we are doing. Most of the people in diaspora, when they get to America, they are still transient in their thinking. What I mean by that is that we still believe that America is not home and we just come here and make it, set up some things back home and move back home. I mean, 90% of the time, or actually I'll say 98% of the time, that does not happen because people go back and come right back. So one of the things we've started doing, both on the board and the commission, is to remind ourselves, myself included, that I here are also U.S. citizens. The only thing that most of the African immigrants cannot do is run for president, but you can run for different positions. You can work in government. And because of the, I say PTSD, and from back home, which is the fact that most of the African countries where we come from, government does not really do anything for the citizens. People do not believe in government. So we that becomes a transferred baggage when we get here. We do not participate in the political discourse. And we only do that maybe during presidential elections when we are excited. So part of what we have started doing as part of our work is to let our people know, listen, if you don't, if you're not at the table, and then you're part of the menu. So get involved. The more we work together, the more we can achieve. And we've had some results here in the state of Maryland. Here in Prince George's County, which is my home county, through the intervention and support of the county executive, Angela Olsebrooks, we have three first-generation African daughters of immigrants that have won, contested in the council elections here, and have won. One of them is Council Member Juanita Fisher. She has a Nigerian and a South African heritage. We also have Council Member Wala Blige, has a Liberian and a Nigerian heritage. And also Council Member Crystal Oriada, Kenya and the U.S. So having people of African descent getting elected has made our people believe, and some of them are starting to come out of the shadows to say, wow, this is possible. Our kids can also run and win, and also can be appointed to different political offices. And we've had several appointments also by Governor Wes Moore, and one of his deputy chief of staff is as a Ghanaian heritage. So these appointments and elections and I'm making our people believe, and some of them are coming out of their shadows now to participate.
That was Chukwuneonso Vincent Iwanoge, Chair of Maryland Governor's Commission on African Affairs, speaking with me from Silver Spring, Maryland. How do the Africans in the diaspora shape their views on U.S. presidential elections? I am the moderator, Yehiz Wuhib, and this is one of the many questions I'll be asking our panelists on VOA's African Diaspora Town Hall event, Wednesday, October 9th at 18:30 UTC. Kais Saied has been re-elected president of Tunisia with 90.69% of votes cast, according to the electoral authority, ISIE. But turnout Sunday was only 28.8% of nearly 10 million eligible voters, reflecting widespread discontent in the cradle of the Arab Spring pro-democracy uprisings. Saied, 66, has been widely expected to win after the ISIE barred 14 candidates, leaving just two challengers. Celebrating the exit polls late Sunday, Saied warned of foreign interference, pledging to rid Tunisia of the corrupt and the conspirators. A rare deluge of rainfall has left blue lagoons of water amid the palm trees and sand dunes of the Sahara Desert. The Associated Press says it's nourishing some of its most drought-stricken regions with more water than many had seen in decades. Southeastern Morocco's desert is among the world's most barren and arid places and rarely experiences rain in late summer. Some areas receive under 50 millimeters of rain a year, an amount dwarfed by last month's downpours. 6 years of drought have forced farmers to leave fields fallow and cities and villages to ration water consumption. The recent rainfall will likely help refill the large groundwater aquifers, but flooding left dozens dead in Morocco and Algeria.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Regas, Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.